When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Wire to Wire podcast. As always, it's me, your host Yusuf. Now, without further ado, let's just get right to it. So you guys see the title of this episode. I've been planning and developing this episode because I wanted to do a thorough and comprehensive album review. Now, I find nowadays people just listen to music for a couple of days, formulate an opinion, and create content on their early thoughts. And I'm not going to lie, I do this too with certain, if not most, artists. But I believe that an album of this magnitude and the gravitas of this moment and what this album represents, it deserves an opportunity for me to at least let it marinate so I can really do a deep dive of it. And here we are, my full review of The Weeknd's latest and possibly his last album, Hurry Up Tomorrow. Now, the overall album showcases all of The Weeknd's strength as an artist, as well as all of the elements that shows his musical prowess and genius. The songwriting, lyricism, production, the transitions, and mid-song beat switches. Now, these are all elements that have really become trademarks of his catalog, and on this album, it's no different. The only difference is not only does he utilize them, but he elevated his game, so to speak, and perfected it. So from the opening song, Wake Me Up, it starts off with a melancholic sound over rich production, and it has an operatic element to it, which is somewhat of a new type of sound. Then we get the infamous beat switch to a Thriller sample. And it's interesting. When he did the One Night in Sao Paulo, I remember that he opened with this song, and I thought I heard a Thriller sample, and I was checking online to see if anyone noticed it, but I didn't really find anyone talking about it at the time, but I know what I heard. So eventually, at the time of the release of this album, it was confirmed that it was a Thriller sample, so I knew I wasn't tripping. But it's a strong start to the album that really sets the tone, and it smoothly transitions to Cry For Me. And this is a well-produced song that became an early fan favorite, and it's not hard to see why. He also recently put out the music video for the song as well. And Mike Dean and Metro Boomin absolutely killed the production of this song. And The Weeknd and Belly, they finished the alley-oop with their songwriting. Now, one thing I have to say, and this applies to The Weeknd, but really I'm speaking more so for Belly, because I don't believe that he gets the full credit, acclaim, and respect that he deserves. But his pen game is legendary. He's an incredible writer and lyricist. Even when discussing The Weeknd, he's so talented as an artist, and his musical projects are usually blockbuster. And I think it sometimes overshadows his songwriting ability. Now, they're both elite songwriters, but when they work together, they craft undeniable hits. And this song has the recipe for being a hit, and it worked. And we get a couple of transitional skits early on in the album, but they blend perfectly. I Can't F***ing Sing smoothly transitions to Sao Paulo, and Sao Paulo was a good single, but hearing it in sequence of the album makes it much better. Also, after the Weeknd dropped the movie trailer for Hurry Up Tomorrow, it made it pretty clear that the skit originates from the movie, and you could tell that the moment when he lost his voice at the SoFi show, that it really impacted him. And also, too, on a side note, since I brought up the movie trailer, we then found out that the album covers actually originate from stills of scenes from the movie itself. And on a side note, this is a reason why I took my time with this review. I wanted to see what would come after the album release. Usually there might be a deluxe album, or there might be other announcements, and I wanted to wait it all out so that this review can be as complete as possible. And I'm glad that I did. A lot has come out and emerged since that time. A movie trailer, tour dates, music videos. So it seems like this era is really starting to expand. But back to the album. So the early transition from Until We're Skin and Bones to Baptized in Fear to Open Hearts is incredible. It's out of this world good, and it really sets the tone for a cohesive project. We then get the interlude of Opening Night, and honestly, although it was the interlude, I wish that song was actually longer. And Reflections Laughing is so well produced, and The Weeknd is floating on that track. And then we get the skit in the middle of the song by Cherry 22. Then there's a surprise feature from Travis Scott. Now look, I'll be honest, I would have preferred if Travis was not on this track. I just don't think lyrically he contributed much to the song, and his lyrical subject matter, I don't believe, matched the theme and the direction of the song. Now there's a long-running joke online that The Weeknd has made appearances on Travis Scott's albums, but Travis Scott has never been on any of The Weeknd's albums. So maybe since this is his final album, he felt a sense of obligation to the fans and Travis himself to put him on the album, and so he did. However, I will give The Weeknd credit that he didn't give Travis a large portion of the song, and he only had a short verse after that skit in the middle of it. Now, I personally thought Florence and the Machine contributed very positively, and they played a crucial role to the song itself. Now, Enjoy the Show was another strong performance as well, including the production. But again, my only feedback would have been the future appearance. I thought he did more to hurt the song than help the song. And it kind of reminds me that I remember on the Starboy album, that song All I Know, The Weeknd was floating on that track, right, at the start. And then Future's verse ended up, I think, hurting the song. I remember he was rapping about being Pyru and a bunch of other stuff that didn't match what the theme of the song was. Now, on this track, to his credit, he stuck to the subject matter a little bit more, but I just found that his delivery was lacking. But after Future's verse, The Weeknd closed it out perfectly, and he gave it a fitting end. And then that goes on to Giving Up On Me, right? That was such an incredible song, from the production to The Weeknd's performance. And I also like that Future's role was much more minimal. And really, I think it just served as a bridge to a slight change in tempo and basically a borderline beat switch. And then from there, The Weeknd floated on the track incredibly. And the second half of this song, right, going into I Can't Wait to Get There, the next track, it had a semblance of the Motown sound with a more modern, elegant, high-quality production. And even the song I Can't Wait to Get There, it reminded me so much of that song Lady in My Life by Michael Jackson. You know, just the sound and the vibe of it. He didn't sample that song, but the energy was similar from a production standpoint. But needless to say, it was an incredible track. And I think this portion of the album represents an evolution of The Weeknd in terms of his sound, songwriting, and subject matter. Niagara Falls is a brilliant song, and the transition to Take Me Back to LA is out of this world. Now, that song, Take Me Back to LA, was one of the most anticipated songs. It was played during an Instagram Live, during his infamous live sessions during the pandemic, and there was a lot of hype for it. After nearly 5 years of demand, we finally got it. Also, to me, this song serves as somewhat of a response or a continuation of Escape from LA from After Hours. So, since his last three projects serve as a trilogy, it seems fitting that there are songs that share a connection that seem to evolve from one another. And this album, I think, has quite a bit of this. So Take Me Back to LA is a great example. It's an 80s pop record, but the songwriting shows a level of growth and self-reflection. And Big Sleep has a collaboration with Giorgio Moroder, who is a composer and music producer. And this song really showcases both of their strengths at a high level. So it has the signature beat switch, and The Weeknd delivered a song that deals with existential questioning. And from a production standpoint, it is very cinematic and somewhat opera-esque. It also appears to give an ode to Daft Punk closer to the end of the song. And this fits the sequence of the album perfectly. From there, it goes to a more brighter and soulful song, Give Me Mercy. Now, I found this track intriguing for a couple of reasons. So number one, I thought that it was a new bag for him. He was definitely going for a soulful, almost gospel-like sound on this song, which is really a new lane for him, but he did it quite effortlessly. Secondly, when looking at the lyrics, it seems like this is a response or somewhat continuation of the song Faith from After Hours. So again, there is another example that kind of ties everything together and shows the growth and evolution. On Faith in After Hours, he discusses losing his faith or a period of a time in his life when he was losing his faith. And now here he shares that he found it. And it's interesting because when I did the episode of my expectations of the album, I predicted that there will be some experimental opera or choir type sounds, and I was speaking along the lines of something like this. I just had a feeling he would engage in this genre. And in the third trailer he put out, he used a song, I believe it was Runaway, and it sounded pretty soulful and gospel-like, and that's what led me to making that prediction on that last episode that I did. So I was pleasantly surprised to see that he actually did it, and pleasantly surprised to see that I was right. Plus, Enjoy the Show and Given Up on Me also had some soulful samples as well. But for him to kind of dabble and go into the gospel lane, I found it to be riveting. Throughout his career, one of the subjects that he's often discussed was his spiritual journey as it pertains to his faith and belief in a higher power. And it seems that he's arrived at a place where he's found that sense of belief. We then go to Drive. This was a well-produced song, it sequences very well, and this was an early favorite for me. Now, this song was fascinating to me, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but just hear me out. I remember a few years ago, he did an interview and he said that he admires artists like Michael Jackson who can make music on world issues that come from an authentic place and that he doesn't think that he has the ability to do it himself. Now, when listening to this song and the song prior, Give Me Mercy, I believe that The Weeknd has the ability to do it as well. Now, when I listen to the subject matter of the song before this and Drive, there's a line in it where he says, "Just be kind, I'm a child again, and no child deserves suffering." Now, with what's been going on in the world over the past year and a half, and his numerous charitable donations to the cause, hearing this song right after Give Me Mercy, for some reason, it just brought me back to when he said that. And I realized that I think that he can actually do it.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
His growth as a songwriter, storyteller, and even his delivery is very evident on this album. Now, the track after The Abyss was one of my most anticipated songs, and I'm sure that was the case for many others. Now, after he previewed it on Instagram Live during the pandemic, there has been years of pure anticipation for it. Now, the snippet back in July 2024 when he released that trailer, I believe it was the second one, it covered about 60 to 70% of the song, right? But on the 22-track version, it featured a surprise appearance from Lana Del Rey. Now, truthfully, I'm glad her feature was limited to more so background vocals, but I don't think she elevated this song. It definitely didn't really need her vocals, and truthfully, was better off without it. I think he just featured her because she was a previous frequent collaborator of his. And since this is the conclusion, he probably thought it was fitting for the sake of his fans as well as the narrative to include her. But nonetheless, it's still a great song, right? From its production to his lyrics and vocals. I personally prefer it without Lana, but it's still a favorite of mine from the album. Now, Red Terror was well produced and had great vocals, but the clear standout is the songwriting and storytelling. Now, the song is performed from the perspective of his mother and also is in reference to a politically volatile and violent period in Ethiopia, you know, his ethnicity, as well as where his family is from. So, like I said earlier, I believe he has evolved so much as a songwriter that he is capable of writing from various perspectives and on a variety of topics. And it's interesting. I can't exactly remember when, but I do remember that he did an interview saying that he wanted to write an album from the perspective of a woman. But what better place to start than writing this song from the perspective of his own mother on a project of this magnitude? And also the ending line, "Call me by the old familiar name," seems to reference him starting to identify himself as Abel, his birth name, as opposed to The Weeknd, his stage name. So for me, it was just brilliant the way he pieced all of this together. Without a Warning serves as a great penultimate song. It's almost like he's lyrically taking people through a brief journey of his career, discussing his early years of intoxication to where he is now, having gotten older. It also seems to reference the night at SoFi Stadium where he lost his voice. Also, the outro sonically reminded me of the bridge in Faith. You know, when he sang, "I lost my faith, I'm losing my religion every day." The way it sounds, the delivery, it just seems similar. I wonder if that was done intentionally to kind of connect the projects together, but I'm not entirely sure. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, though. And the album closes out with the self-titled song, "Hurry Up Tomorrow." Now, this song reminds me a lot of "Give Me Mercy" in terms of subject matter and the soulful or gospel element to it. Now, it's probably one of, if not his most personal song yet. It also serves as a fitting end. Its lyrics acknowledge and mention the finality of the moment, but rather than coming from a place of fear or uncertainty, there's an acceptance that he reached the end. And he also alludes to a higher power and wanting to reach heaven, showing once again that full circle moment regarding his belief. He also expresses feelings of abandonment stemming from not having a father present in his life, but also has a moment of regret and even apologizes to his mother. It was an introspective, vulnerable, and sentimental song that I believe encapsulated everything regarding The Weeknd that people have come to respect and admire about his work. His thoughtful lyrics, the raw honesty, and just how real the song itself is. Now, I'm not an emotional guy, but I can understand the emotions behind the song that someone can feel because it lands perfectly. From the production to his vocals, the delivery, and the songwriting, it blends and fits perfectly. There is no more fitting way to end the album than with a song like this. And to add the perfect touch and to show just how thoughtful he is with his music, at the end of the song, it transitions to the beginning of High For This, the first song of House of Balloons from his first mixtape and the first of that trilogy. Now, it doesn't get any more thoughtful and meticulous than that. To transition the end to the beginning of his journey as The Weeknd is a crazy touch that I believe no other artist in the world could have came up with. Now, needless to say, this album touches on the theme of life and death quite a bit, and I get it in the context of him, you know, retiring The Weeknd as a character. That makes sense to me. However, I do want to say that I hope that him as a person, right, taking out the artist, right, forget the music for a moment, just him as a person, that he lives a long life of peace, happiness, and prosperity. Now, while he's alluding to the character of The Weeknd, right, sometimes in life, generally speaking, lines can be blurred, so I can enjoy the art form, but he's more than his art. He's a human being with a life, family, and friends who care about him. So I wouldn't want anything to happen to him as a human being. And the only reason why I'm saying this is because ever since the release of this album, I've seen posts of people saying RIP The Weeknd and all kinds of stuff. And again, I get it, right? Considering the premise of the album and the marketing, such as "The End Is Near" because this is the end of The Weeknd chapter, I completely understand. But like I'm saying, the lines between art and creativity can sometimes get blurred with real life. So I do believe it's important for me to make this distinction. I do want and hope for him to live a long, peaceful, prosperous life. The art is its own thing. For me, I'm just speaking from a place of humanity now, and I just thought it was important for me to share this message. what is this, the hurry up tomorrow effect? I'm over here being all vulnerable and stuff now. But all jokes aside, you know, after 2020, when Kobe, God rest his soul, died, the sudden and tragic nature of it, you know, changed my perspective on things in some respects. So I'm compelled to say something like this. Now, I'm not trying to get all morbid or depressing here, but I just thought that this was also a point that I wanted to really clarify and expand on. But back to the music. Overall, this was a great album. It exceeded my expectations, and I thought it was the perfect end to this trilogy. And I'm excited to see it performed in a stadium, but I'm also curious to see how it coincides with the movie. Now, the trailer seemed interesting and action-packed, and from the trailer, I saw glimpses of how it might connect to the album. So, for example, in the movie trailer, you know, he's seen drowning in a tub, and the lyrics in Baptized in Fear alludes to facing a near-death experience of drowning in a tub. So I'm curious and excited to see how this all fits the narrative. Now, that movie comes out in May, and it's when the tour kicks off too. And this album was meant to be performed in stadiums, so I'm really looking forward to his performance. Now, overall, it was an incredible album, certainly some of his best work. I'm not really ready to rank it amongst his latest trilogy, because I believe it's too early. Now, After Hours has been around for 5 years, right? 5 years this March. And Don FM is already 3 years. So I had more time to really digest those albums as opposed to this. I mean, it's only been 18 days at time of recording. So it's too premature. But it's basically the perfect album. And also why it's so difficult is, you know, this trilogy I have a soft spot for because it's almost like each album represented a moment or a chapter in my life that was very pivotal to me, right? So with After Hours coming out in 2020, I remember very distinctly and vividly where I was at in my life and the different things that were going on. And this album served as almost like a soundtrack to it. And then Don FM, I was in a completely different space in my life, and that album kind of served as a soundtrack for that moment and that space of where I was in my life. It all just seemed to kind of fit perfectly. So with this album, I do find myself in a different space in my life and, you know, charting a new path, a new territory. So I guess I kind of find it coincidental that these albums seem to come out as I enter these different chapters of my own personal life. But, you know, that's the thing with music, right? You have your own connection to it. And this just so happens to kind of coincide with my life in a pretty organic way. But that's why it's kind of hard for me to rank them. You know, maybe one day after enough time has passed, I'll be able to do it. But for now, I can't. I'll just say that I thought that this was the perfect album and the perfect conclusion to this trilogy. It has everything that you would want in an album from The Weeknd. He somehow always finds a way to keep outdoing himself and delivering music at a high level. Now, if this is The Weeknd's final album, then he's ending it on a high note. This is the storybook ending to his musical career as The Weeknd. I believe that it's a future classic album. And the fact that it was his highest first week sales of his career, again, that is a storybook ending to a unique and legendary career. An incredible album by a great artist. But that's all I got for you guys today. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast and share it with your people. You can also follow me and the podcast on social media. You can check out my books. All of these links will be in the description. Until next time.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.